What do you call thongs? Oh, right when the recording starts. Perfect. For those of you who missed out, we're talking about flip-flops. And Kavi said, in Australia, we call them thongs. Then, as recording began, I asked, well, what do you call thongs? And now you're up to speed.
This is all kidding cut. It's fine.
No, it better not.
Okay.
No, I want our audience to watch our show slowly devolve over episodes.
Welcome back to the Space Case Sarah Show. Pull it together. Welcome back to the Space Case Sarah Show with my space nerds, Kavi and Benjamin, here on iRock Space Radio. We actually were talking before you jumped on with us, Benjamin, the different ways we refer to soda versus seltzer versus pop versus cola in different parts of the world. And I was telling him how it's very common, you know, in the United States, where all our regions have very firm beliefs in what it should be called. In my realm, it's kind of a 50-50, like pop soda. But my unique claim to fame is that I grew up in Milwaukee area, I grew up in the Milwaukee.
It's very unique. Very
unique. And we're
no one's ever done that.
Pretty much the only pocket of the entire United States that refers to drinking fountains as bubblers. So everyone in that area calls drinking fountains bubblers. And then as soon as you leave, everyone's like, what are you talking about?
I remember when I was younger, people could ask just for a cola. I'll have a cola. Yeah, and cola, whatever they had, Coca-Cola or Pepsi, they'll just give it to you. And there was no problem. Now there's the whole, you have to be specific.
I mean, if you serve me Pepsi, that's a problem.
Yes, it's a huge problem. Yes, obviously. All right. Sci-fi. Speaking of accuracy and what we find accurate and what we don't find, we were just talking about the Voyager Golden Records. It's called Farthest. It's a documentary on the Voyagers that we all really enjoy and appreciate. Obviously, we brought up Cosmos in our pre-chats about shows that we really enjoy and we believe that got the science super duper right. Are there really, I guess I'm thinking about it, any shows that don't get the science right? Because I can't.
Many shows that get the science right.
A lot of the shows on the History Channel aren't historical and aren't scientific.
Ancient Aliens. Yeah.
That guy, my God. One guy ruined the credibility of a network.
I mean, it's not really space related, but I love the oh my gosh, I'm blanking on his name. The nature documentaries. Oh, so David Attenborough. I'm sorry.
David Attenborough,
Yeah. Like,
his shows are amazing, too.
Mesmerizing. And the science there is just chef's kiss. Just wow.
Yes. And like all the Blue Ocean, Blue Planet, Blue World, those mm-hmm. ones are great. Disney nature videos are phenomenal. I don't know if you've ever watched any of those, but they're on the Disney Channel. Like, it's geared mm-hmm. more towards kids, but they always have a famous actor do the narration for it. So I'm thinking of the one with the dolphins, when a dolphin named Echo and Natalie Portman is the voiceover for that one.
The dolphin named Echo, of course it is.
His name is Echo.
No, but it's perfect because they use echolocation.
I know. So
oh, that was a joke. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, I think that was intentional. but and I really liked in the second season of Cosmos, they covered really a very wide range of, well, both of them do, I guess, not space topics, but like it does such a great job of interweaving how all these things that we have on Earth also connect into space. And so they have those moments, though, where you really dip into a different world that's completely unrelated to space. And so in the new season, for example, there's one that's completely on bees, and I keep honeybees. And so I think that was one of my really favorite episodes. Yes. Yes. We had a bit of a bee debacle today in my world, not the bees. And that's what I think is so cool about that, is that you're not just getting education about the cosmos, even though it is about the cosmos, you're getting a solid education in like photosynthesis and just lots of different things. So I don't feel like there's a lot of shows that aren't made Yeah, other than like kind of like ancient aliens, or I guess those like cryptozoology kind of ones. Those are a little hokey. What's, you know what I'm talking about?
What is like, cryptozoology? Is this like a new form of currency where people barter and trade in animals?
Isn't that what it's called, cryptozoology?
I've never heard of this. I'm sorry.
Crypto.
While Sarah's looking that up, I just wanted
to cryptozoology is a pseudoscience and subculture that searches for and studies unknown, legendary, or extinct animals. So think like Bigfoot.
Minotaur. Pokemon.
And yeah.
Pokemon are real.
I don't know. But I also, legend in my area, there was supposedly a beast that lived on Bray Road. So if you Google Beast of Bray Road, you will find my hometown. And
was it the Chupacabra?
Nope, it's the East of Bray Road. It was a sighting that someone saw in the 90s, and so a bunch of those shows went to my town and did different documentary things on that. So I guess we do have some not very scientifically accurate TV shows out there.
I mean, Beast of since Bray we're Road, leaning,
though, that was real.
Since we're leaning a bit more back towards the fiction direction of science fiction, I just wanted to say, like, with Star Trek, it's one of the things that, like, it's crazy how I grew up and I was obsessed with Star Wars, and Star Trek to me was kind of eh. And as an adult, I've realized that I feel the opposite way, because Star Wars is more like fantasy rather than trying to be scientifically accurate in any sort of way. Whereas Star Trek, or at least like the, you know, the older versions, maybe the recent stuff, not so much, because, you know, they throw in terms like magic time crystals or blah, blah, blah. But the older Star Trek, the oldest Star Trek was really trying to do something that was at least science adjacent. And like you were saying before, Sarah, how a lot of the technology, like the flip phones, that became a reality. Sliding doors became a reality. And so I love how it's kind of like Star Trek managed to predict the future in a sort of way. And all the episodes, like really interesting things you never think about. Like, what if, I think there was an episode where they had a creature that was made out of crystals in deep space. It's like, sure. Like, why not? What would that look like?
Yeah, that reminds me. I think I've mentioned it on the show before, and there's a YouTube series. I guess we're really kind of going all over the place with with this episode of, it's called the history of life, or no, the Museum of Life. And it bases it bases off of evolutionary theory, like if there was life on that planet that far from a star, what might that look like based on kind of like the evolutionary hits that we see on Earth? And it's really awesome. And I guess that's, a good kind of middle ground from, it's not science, right? It's definitely pseudoscience. It's not real, but it is, I think science adjacent is a really good way of phrasing that. It's definitely being conscientious of science principles and the laws of physics, and that documentary, the evolutionary traits that we tend to see, and using those in consideration for their predictions and their fiction. But it's kind of a cool halfway ground. It's not going and researching for Bigfoot or the Loch Ness Monster, but it's a little different. So it is like an interesting subcategory of kind of sci-fi-ish stuff, right? Which then, so Star Wars, I agree, is very, very okay with the idea that they are completely fictional. So I wouldn't say we can really include it in our list of who bogs the science so terribly. But let's go there. Let's talk about, Lisa in our live stream was like, what movies do you find the most scientifically accurate?
And which speaking ones? Of accuracy. Yes. Her name is Adina.
Adina? Well, sorry.
My wife's name is Lisa.
You're tearing me apart, Lisa.
Sorry, Adina.
Start Adina the whole episode over.
Dang it. We're done. Lick your screens. We're starting over. Adina. Sorry. I am so sorry. She asked what we thought was accurate and which ones weren't. And I feel that movies, that's where we get really hairy with the accuracy compared to the TV shows. So I'm going to let you guys kind of offer up your, like, most and least. What would you say is the most accurate and what's the least accurate? And you kind of touched on that in the live stream, but.
Most accurate and least accurate. My goodness.
I feel like.
Go on.
Oh, sorry. Just like speaking of Harry, I feel like we have to talk about the black hole in Interstellar.
Right.
Okay. Like there's this whole no hair theorem that physicists will use when they're talking about black holes and say, you know, black holes have these three basic characteristics. They have spin, they have mass, and they have charge. That's it. And there's this idea that the way that it warps space, I don't want to get too deep into general relativity, but what I do want to say is that the way that the black hole was depicted in Interstellar was so accurate that it passed the point where Christopher Nolan basically said, we have to dial it back a bit because people aren't going to know that this is a black hole. It will kind of like surpass the expectations and then not be relatable as a black hole. And so the black hole that they used in Interstellar was actually created with a simulation by an astrophysics professor at Caltech, Professor Kip Thorne. And there were a couple of papers that were written on the simulation that they used. So Interstellar, like in general, there are some points that are maybe a little bit kind of off the beaten path of science, but the black hole itself, they got the science pretty dang accurately.
That's really interesting. It makes me think of not a science movie, but when Pixar was making movies like Finding Nemo, and they used computers to basically create some of the ocean, like the waves and the ocean environment on their own. And they used things like fractals and you know, like computery stuff. It looked too real. And they had to ask the artists to basically like scale it back and make it look more cartoonish because the computers did such a good job to make it look so incredibly realistic that they had to ask them to like not, like the waves were too real. So that's super fascinating and also a very interesting commentary on kind of our culture because it's like, that's too real, dang it. I don't approve of that. My brain cannot handle the fact that I cannot differentiate the fact that that is not real versus real. So I think that's kind of an interesting, it's maybe roots into our fear also of like AI and deep fakes and how the robots are going to take over and
the uncanny valley.
Yes. So that was your like accurate. Benjamin, do you have an accurate? I think you said Space Odyssey 2001 the last time we brought this up. Is there another one?
Go back there. Yeah. I was going to say Contact was a very good one. Obviously. Not scientifically accurate as a retelling of things that have happened, but when Carl Sagan wrote Contact, he imagined what an alien species would be that tried to contact us. But what he refused to bend on was any use of communication outside of what is technically and physically possible. And he made sure he always obeyed the science. And so the very beginning of the movie, it starts with a television broadcast and we slowly pan away from Earth and get further and further away from Earth. And as you listen, you're starting to hear older and older and older and older broadcasts. And now we're passing a star, passing another star. And we're hearing, you know, something, you know, radio shows from the 20s, say. And so that's how far back it goes. And it was a very beautiful depiction of, I guess, our bubble that we've created of communication that we're sitting in the middle of. And also the communication that we got from the aliens. It was bursts of noise that we picked up. One burst, then two, then three, then five, then seven. A series of bursts, each a prime number's worth of information. And then inside there was decoded messages, and inside that there's deeper messages, and these are all things that are very, very possible. And as we kind of discussed in a previous episode about the Arecibo message, how we sent a message and inside that there was more information, and inside that there was more information, and this is something that we've actually done. And so it's very possible that something another species could send to us. It was very, very beautiful, and I enjoyed it.
great. Delightfully nerdy.
I like suggest everyone watch it.
I haven't seen it in quite some time, but it is definitely a very interesting like blip in the legacy of Carl Sagan, because it's the only fiction thing that he wrote and made, and he did it with Anne, and so it's a great movie. I agree. I just think I love hidden meanings and things and stuff like that too. So it's just like it's just delightfully nerdy. We have to take a break. We're saving, I guess, the roast, the best for last year. We're going to talk about where it goes wrong, because I think that we could fill an entire show with just where it goes wrong. So we will take a quick break. Again, lick those phones, and we'll be back as soon as you're done licking. You have been listening to the Space Case Sarah Show with the space nerds, Connie and Benjamin, here on iRock Space Radio.